We're looking at light, and looking at light and how that. Looking at light and how we've got these weird things, we call them half silvered mirrors, just going back here. And physically, they actually probably can show you some. I can't guarantee it, but they probably have a whole bunch of them at the Institute for Quantum Computing. Sometimes they call them half-silvered mirrors, so they're kind of like mirrors, but they're a bit faulty. They're imperfect mirrors. So, but again, the easiest way is you have a flashlight. You can shine light in, half of it goes through, half of it gets reflected. And if you have an individual tiny particle of light, photon, the basic components, constituents of light, and it will have a genuinely 50% chance of going through and 50% chance of going up. And you can actually represent that mathematically and predict exactly with quantum physics how that is. And the way you do that is with matrices. And so we'll see that now. So we saw this weird case here that was, let me see, 100% there and then 0% there. Why? Why is that? So you will actually derive that. So we kind of said, look, there are all these possible paths for the photon to take. So it can get reflected and transmitted, and then, sorry, reflected and reflected, transmitted and transmitted, and they kind of So they both happen simultaneously, because in some sense the photon, before we look at it, even though this is kind of weird, but it actually takes both paths at the same time. So both goes there and goes there, so you kind of have these, in some sense, two photons here. But they're sort of out of phase with each other. They're out of sync with each other. So they kind of, just like a trough and a crescent, exactly like two ripples in a pond, destructive interference. So that's why you get the zero probability there. And again, this is a bit sort of fuzzy. We'll go through exactly the mathematics soon. So, and they're in phase, they're in sync with each other there, and that leads to the 100%. Okay, so I will just say, in physics, often we mention there are many different languages, there are many different ways of looking at things. And one way we have is this is kind of one of the more crazy ideas. Hands up who's heard of the many worlds interpretation of quantum physics? Okay, great. Well, what that says is, so can I tell you a secret? Okay, no one really knows what's going on in quantum physics. So no one really knows. We have lots of theories. We can exactly predict down to, remember one part in 10 to the billion, in 10 billion of what's going on. But in terms of what the photons are doing when we're not looking at them, we don't know. No one knows. That's an open area, an active area of research. And so this is really uncommon. I think in physics class, you're used to the teacher having all the answers and saying this is this and that's that. But in physics, in research, you go around to everyone here is working on stuff that they don't know the answer to, and no one on the planet knows the answer to, because if they did, then it wouldn't be research, because you'd know the answer to it. So this is what research is. In one area, foundations of quantum physics, people are looking at is even a simple question. So what happens to, even a simple question, if you put one photon in towards this half-silver mirror, what actually is it doing before we measure it? So you could go around to different people in this building and they would give you different answers. So you could go around to physicists all over the planet and get different answers. And this is really looking at what's called the how to interpret what's going on. And what's really is it meaning physically? What picture of the world do we have at the quantum level when we're not looking at it? What happens here in terms of measurement? We have this exquisitely precise theory for describing that. We'll see that soon. In terms of what's really going on, I don't know. So one theory, this is probably not the craziest theory, it seems like something out of a bad science fiction novel, maybe a good science fiction novel, and so there are serious physicists that believe this. In particular, the kind of people that do what's called quantum cosmology, they're trying to apply quantum physics to the entire universe, people like Stephen Hawking. And tend to like this view. And so that view says that we have this beam splitter here. Sorry, actually, I told it. I didn't mean to say that. But they sometimes the half-silvered mirrors are called beam splitters, so that's why I mentioned that. So we have this half-silvered mirror, and when one single individual photon comes and can either take one of the two paths, either get transmitted in the top case or reflected in the bottom case, what the many worlds universe interpretation says is the entire physical universe, everything, not just planet Earth, not just Canada, not just the solar system, the universe, everything splits into two just because all this little teeny tiny photon had to choose whether it was going to be reflected or get transmitted. And in those two universes, basically we start off with one universe, we have two entire physical universes, and in those two universes, one of them, it gets transmitted, the top one, and the other, it's reflected. So basically both possibilities happen, it's just in two different universes. But if there are two different universes, then there are two different copies of you walking around. So according to this universe, this interpretation, in this case there would be two copies of you in two different universes. But this doesn't just happen for photons making a choice. What it says is that for any individual event, actually at the quantum level, whenever an electron has decided to jump down from one energy level to another, or if, say, for example, what's another example, a radioactive atom has to choose the amorism in your smoke detector whether to decay or not, what happens is the entire universe splits into two, sometimes even more if there are more than two possibilities. And so because of this, this many worlds interpretation says that the universe is just continually, as I'm speaking now, according to it, it's just splitting into multiple possibilities. And the way of picturing that is kind of branching out like a tree. Okay. Someone seems to have been writing on my blackboard. So we have a kind of tree here. And as we go up, in time, these are kind of actually. So these are meant to be the branches. As we're going up in time, we have a split there, split there. Okay, so that's yeah. And there's kind of a three-way split here, and another one there. So we have this kind of branching up like a tree. So this is a picture we have in the many worlds interpretation. So according to that, there are millions and millions and millions of copies of you wandering around in other universes, and they're exactly the same as you, except they just differ by little tiny little quantum events being different. So that's the many worlds interpretation, which seems, yes?
Does it only apply when like quantum choices have been made?
Sorry?
Does it only apply when quantum decisions or options?
As opposed to classical?
Well, like,
or,
like, maybe I could clean my teeth, maybe I won't.
Right.
Is there one universe where I do and one where I don't?
Okay. So that actually depends on how universal quantum is. So we don't exactly know what goes. So in some sense, presumably yes, because if we believe that quantum physics is a universal theory that applies to everything in the world. And so it applies to this computer and applies to your chairs, because ultimately if it applies at level of one atom, then ultimately your chairs and this computer are just billions and billions of atoms, about an Avogadro's number. So presumably quantum physics applies to one atom, and it applies to large collections of atoms. And now if you believe that you're just a physical body and your brain's just your neurotransmitters and chemicals and so forth, and you can completely describe it, therefore, by quantum physics, that it's just when you make a choice, really all that is just atoms and serotonin and nerve endings and stuff. Yeah.
Everything is just like a blown-up version of quantum mechanics or something.
Yeah, essentially. So that's really extrapolating quantum physics to the entire universe. Which is, yeah, a very interesting area. So, and I guess that's similar to you extrapolating quantum physics from the level of the individual atom up to the level. So, in principle, if you believe you're just a physical body and quantum physics is universal, then there would actually be, for every quantum system, there's the way to describe it is by a wave called the wave function. It's actually by this equation. So, according to that view, then we could actually describe you by this equation. And so there would be like a wave function for Amy. here. And then in principle, anyone in this class could actually describe what's happening and your choices in terms of whether to brush your teeth or not by this equation. And so therefore, yeah, it would. Yep, because ultimate, yes.
So you said if we were to accept that quantum theory applied is a universal thing, you have to give up free will.
You're getting into really deep stuff now. Well, see, people have actually debated about this. It depends what you mean by free will. And some people have said that the randomness of quantum physics is inherently unpredictable, just as radioactive atoms decaying. And so possibly that can somehow be relate to free will or even be the cause of free will in some ways. But that seems kind of, I personally find that pretty hard to believe. But this is, I mean, this is getting on to, I mean, no, it's an excellent question. But really, there's so much we don't know about the human mind. There's so much we don't know about the human brain. So possibly it would, but where we really do not know. I mean, people are just starting to look at quantum physics of the brain. And maybe those effects aren't even significant whatsoever. But quite possibly that would be true. So, but maybe quantum physics does not describe everything. Maybe, you know, we have a soul, there's a non-physical mind or something like that that we don't, I mean, who knows? So, yep. Okay, so before I forget, what I'm actually going to do now is we've got a little handout. And so so I'm going to be... Actually, I'll hand this out a bit later. I just changed my mind, so just forget what I said. Okay, so many worlds... Actually, could you remind me if I forget? Thanks. Sorry.
Did you forget what you said?
What?
Never mind.
Okay, so many worlds interpretation. So that was kind of a little bit aside, and that's a different way of looking at it. And you might say, well, which is the right way to look at it? Are they really true? Are the worlds really real? We don't know. No one knows. Certainly there are a lot of physicists that believe that. A lot think that it's a silly theory. And I think for most people, most people's reaction to this is, you know, it just seems just too fantastic and crazy to believe. But just because this thing that's a million times smaller than a grain of sand has to make a choice, why should the entire universe evolve and split up into two? And I guess, the question is, why do people believe in that? And maybe if I could defer that question for about half an hour, because the answer is, they say it follows naturally from the mathematics. So once I teach you the mathematics, I'll be able to give you a much better idea of why people believe that. So, okay, many worlds interpretation.
I'm just really interested because when you're
creating
the universe, like, increase the kind of order of things?
So you have to think about, I think it would tend to increase because you'd rapidly increase the number of, you'd have to look at the number of accessible microstates is roughly entropy. So I think it would increase because if you have one universe and it has entropy S,
yeah.
And you have another one, I don't see how it could not decrease.
Does entropy increase? Doesn't it have to increase?
Yeah. Yes. It will increase or stay the same.
Yes.
As far as we know, yeah, that's second law of thermodynamics, yeah. But definitely what you get is this violates energy conservation. If you have one universe that has a certain amount of energy, you have two universes, you have double the amount of energy. Where did the extra energy come from? It just comes from somewhere. Okay, so getting back to more serious things. Okay, so if we want to understand mathematically what's going on, we need these people. And we've seen these, matrices. And so what quantum physicists, professional quantum physicists do to describe this system is if they say that's one path a photon can take, one possible path. You can go here, reflected, or transmitted through the half-sidered mirror, reflected by the mirror and go up here. And that's one possible path. And the other possible path is going reflected up here and going along here. So what we denote that by, so there are two possible paths that we're considering. Yep?
Sorry, but why are the physical laws or
So really, you can actually derive a lot of I mean, why? That's just because when you get lots of teeny things together in an aggregate overall amount, they come up with just very qualitatively different behavior than what you get individually. Just as if you look at an individual person, you might look at their personality and what they do. So an individual person behaves very, very different to a stadium full of 100,000 soccer or football fans watching the World Cup final. And so that's the difference between sort of one thing and a group of those things. And it's kind of a similar thing between one atom and a group of Avogadro's numbers of atoms. It's collective. So if you get average effects as opposed to individual effects. So in principle, yeah. But in practice, if you wanted to do, I mean, if you wanted to even calculate the quantum physics exactly and solve the Schrodinger equation, that equation there, even this pack of batteries, there's just no way in the world you could do that. It's just, even the most powerful supercomputer, it's just incredibly, incredibly difficult. Because that turns out, so it's basically Avogadro's number of batteries, 10 to the power 23, and it turns out that's the differential equation, a partial differential equation in number of dimensions, three times the number of particles you have. So that's basically, you have a partial differential equation with Avogadro's number of dimensions in it, and they're just, you know, very difficult to solve. Okay, getting back to matrices. Okay, so two possible paths we're considering, and what will, that's how we represent mathematics. There are two possibilities. There, we could denote them by 1 and 2, A and B, but this is one language we use. It's an incredibly useful language. We say if it's taking that photon takes that path, then it's 1, 0, put the 1 up the top, below the 1 down below. So we call them, I think, I'll just check what notation I should have, but okay, so okay, yep, so that's right. So if we call, I think I had that before, this path 1 and this path 2. So path 1 and path 2, maybe you could write those down. So okay, so we've got path 1 and path 2. Okay, so again, we've got these matrices, and we're seeing kind of the interplay between mathematics and quantum physics. So the strange thing is, in Newtonian physics, particles, photons, or any sorts of particles, they can only take one path. They can only be here or there. So if we did, again, this experiment with tennis balls, they'd have to be definitely there or definitely in another path. But this is quantum physics. Things are strange. Things are different. So the photons, in some sense, can take both paths at the same time. And so how would we represent that mathematically? So back here, we go back a couple of slides. So how would we represent mathematically a photon doing that, taking both paths at the same time? Well, crudely speaking, to a first approximation, what we do is we sort of put a plus sign and we add the two possibilities together. So it's a little bit more detailed than that, but this is the first way. So we have, remember, that's a photon taking path 1, and that's a photon taking path 2. And we have them together, kind of this represents photon taking plus 1, path 1, and a photon taking the second path. Dennis?
Why represent a path like 2 by 1 matrix?
Right. And why?
No, but why we have pattern 1 and not have 2 and not have 3 and not as represent so.
Why is it 1 and 0?
Okay. So I mean, it'd be good if I could prove to you why you have to do that. I can't. So the reason is that someone found out a while back this is an incredibly useful way of doing it. There could well be many, many other ways of doing it, but this is a very kind of natural way. Like somehow you've got this thing that can be in two paths. And you wanna do some mathematical way of representing that. And this is kind of a nice way. If it's path 1, it's 1. Path 2, it's 0. So, yes, Sam?
Is this finding somewhat repetitive?
Yeah, you can think of it that way. I won't be getting explicitly onto that, but so this is standard quantum mechanics, but you can think of this assignment as we're kind of going doing fine in some over history as a process. Yep. Good. Okay. So and of course if we have matrices, we add those two together, you know, we just get 1-1. Okay. But it's not, so it's kind of, so that's roughly speaking the mathematical way of representing physically that. So maybe we could draw on that page sort of 1-1. So, okay. That's physically what we have. So yeah, back to mathematically 1-1, 2x1 column matrix. Okay. So it's kind of like that, but it's not quite. And the real one we have is actually this here. So it's 1 over root 2. And remember, we saw the square root of minus 1 the other day. And we actually have this I there. So it's getting a little bit more complicated, but I'm sure you can understand. So we've had all these factors of 1 over root 2 there and the I. And where the heck did they come from? So what we'll see exactly where they come from. So now we know when a photon passes through a half-sided mirror is that 50% chance of getting transmitted, 50% chance of getting reflected. So we've got to somehow find, that's physically what happened. We've got to somehow find a mathematical way of representing that. Because, you know, math is a language of physics. So somehow we've got to, in that matrix, represent those probabilities that 50% have to be there somewhere. And so the way the physicists do is, what they actually do is they take, so the way they represent probabilities is the probability of the particle or photon taking path 1 is the 1-1 element of that matrix. So the 1-1 element is the first row, first column. And we take the modulus of that, or the magnitude. Remember, it could be a complex number, so it's a modulus. And then we square that modulus. And that gives us the probability. And if we want to find out the probability to mathematically represent physical probability of 50% for the particle taking the second path, what we have is we take a look at the 2-1 element, the element of the second row, first column, and we take the modulus of that, or the magnitude of that. And in this case, the magnitude is 1 over root 2, because it's kind of like 1 over root 2 up in the I direction. And then we take the square of that, and square 1 over root 2 gives us a half. So this is what we have. So does that make sense? Okay, yes, Michael. How do you square? Why? Oh, right. So again, I'd like to give you a proof of why you actually do square them. But I can't, so what I say, trust me. And so what it turns out, it's a very useful way of doing things. And there's some technical reasons I could tell you. Because you might say, why don't you just put the probabilities there? So one way of thinking about it, so probabilities are always zero, or somewhere between zero and one inclusive. You can't get a negative probability. That doesn't make sense. So what we actually want to do is we want these things. Sometimes we actually turns out we do want them to be negative, and I'll give you some examples of why we do want them to be negative later on. And we can't have them be negative if they're probabilities, so that's why we kind of want them to be like really the square roots of probability. So it's kind of weird. Why don't we just put half and half in there? And that's because to get the interference effect, we need positive and negative amplitudes to cancel out. And to do that, we need some negative signs in there. And they can't be probabilities, so that's why. Okay, so I've been talking for a while. So, any more questions about this? Great. Okay, so we have a couple of questions here. So what I'd like you to do is get out your paper, do the working out on paper, and then write the answers nice and big on your whiteboards, and then we'll have a look. Yes. Sorry. Okay, so so this is referring to this matrix here. And so what's the one one element of that matrix? So if I have a matrix like this, A, B, C, D, so the element in the first row, we call that, another way of talking about that is to say that it's the one element. So that's just another, so instead of saying this is the element here, A in the first row, because that's row one, row two, just a nice simple way of describing it is to say it's the one, one element. So if that's the case, yep. Which, can you, what do you mean by this? Can you, yeah, exactly. Yep, that's right. Did you have a question from before? Yeah. That question. About the... Oh, okay, okay, right. Yeah. Does my answer make sense? It's a very subtle thing. Not at a deep level, no. But... well, one way of thinking about it is when you get millions and millions of atoms, all the weird, strange quantum effects like a photon taking two halves at the same time cancel each other out and you get all. Yeah. So it's a sense that the things cancel each other out, so all these weird quantum effects cancel each other out, and have an aggregate, you just get normal Newtonian mechanics. You can derive Newtonian mechanics from quantum mechanics, but it's very subtle, the connections between the normal life. So the I is the square root of minus one. Oh, sure.
Oh, I think I'm right.
But the thing is, it's not quite right, because you have to take that, and then you want to take really the magnitude of that first, and then you just square it. So you take the, so really, ah, okay. So what you have is the number I divided by, and remember we had the number, so can you draw that for me on a real imaginary graph? Would you be able to quickly just give me a sense whether they've got it all, and it's too easy or yep, that's fine. Yep. So that's actually 1/2 of the exact same. So it's about there. Okay. So remember, all we have, if you have a complex number U, you have that. Then you have a formula of the modulus and magnitude of U. Remember this. So this is more information. Okay. So use that constant number out. So, okay, so what is, okay, what are, so that's a general complex number. Okay, the complex number we have, what are A and B? Does that make sense? Sorry? Exactly. So what's... Yep, so that... Yep, exactly. A is here, and B is... Sorry? Oh, let's just one under the number. Yep. Okay, so then put that in the formula. Then the magnitude is a squared over b squared. So all we get is 0 squared plus 1 over root 2. And then, so we'll do that. Yeah, exactly. So 1 over root 2, exactly. So that's the modulus. Oh, but you've got a square, they take a square root, so it's going to be a factor. Exactly. And if you square that, exactly. Oh, it's not, what did you say with that particular sign? We get 1 over root 2 here. So therefore we have. This makes sense. The magnitude is whatever the that just follows from this. And now the formula is take the magnitude of it and square it. So the magnitude is, what's the magnitude? If we square, what's the two we get? Yeah. Exactly. Yep. And so what's the answer? Exactly. Yeah, that's all. Yeah. Okay, then have the next one. Oh, nice. So the easiest way to get maximum here is the easiest way is to use. It's probably the most powerful, so it's there's still discussion, so they're still getting it, but So the easiest way is to use the is to represent a complex number in this way. So do you remember this? So so this is number so that's u. So what we want to do is express that in this form. So if we do, what is the magnitude of u, and then what is the theta of s case? So who meant to go? So make sure you have questions. Exactly. Yeah. Or the modulus of u. But what we do is remember the formula we've got. Remember the formula we take the modulus, the magnitude, the square, what's here. So here, remember we've got these lines here, these lines there. And this is, so we just square this. We don't square that. So we just get rid of So from the research, you get the complex number and you take the magnitude. And are you happy that the magnitude of this complex number? Are you happy that the magnitude of this complex number is 1? Okay. What do we get when we square that? Okay, that's right. It doesn't add, yeah. Because by taking the modulus of the magnitude, we get rid of the, we get rid of the that. Because all that is that, that only, the only difference that makes is just what angle it is around. Because the magnitude, how far it is away from it. Okay, is everyone done 1 and 2? Should I go through the answers now? Okay, actually before, could everyone write a big letters, what they have down? Okay. Right. Okay, that's not everyone. Great. Okay, good. Okay, thank you. Wait. Yeah. Exactly, you're right. Yeah. So Dennis said if the photon is more, can be in more than 2 possible states, then the vector must be longer. Absolutely, if there are n possible states, it must be an n dimensional column vector. And you can actually, yeah. Yes, yeah. Yeah. It describes this, you can actually represent that by a vector, like an infinite dimension in orbit space. That's kind of, well, technically it's isomorphic to a matrix, but it's an infinite dimensional one, so yeah, it's easier. So, yep, good point. So, okay, so looks like everyone had that, so what we've got to do just very quickly. So we go back to the previous page. Okay, 1/√2. The magnitude of 1/√2, well, that's just 1/√2. Square that, gives us 1/2. That's right. I divided by √2. So if we represent that on a graphically on here, we have so again, I'm going to be lazy and be a physicist and say RE and Madge. So 1/2. So I/√2, roughly speaking, that'll be around about there, 0.707. Okay, I'll put it down lower. Like that. And so what we want to find out what the magnitude of that is. The magnitude of that is just is the length here, which is 1/√2. So the magnitude of this is 1/√2, and then square that gives us 1/2. So that's the S. The first one. The second one, a little bit more tricky, but I think most people got that. So the first one's easier. What's the property of finding the photon on path 1, the upper one? So we just take the magnitude of 1/√3, which is 1/√3, square 1/√3. We get 1/3. So the answer is 1/3 for the path 1. Second one's a bit tricky. What we want to do is, so take the magnitude of that. And again, if we represent that again on a diagram, I think pictorially, what we have is, so we have something that is an R distance away from well, I'll change the scale a bit, from the origin of this distance. Does anyone know what I should put for this distance here? Exactly. So that's square root of 2 divided by the square root of 3. That's the distances away from the origin. And this a to the I pi before, that doesn't change how far away this point is from the origin, just changes what angle it is around, because this angle here is theta equals 45 or pi over 4. So if we want to find the magnitude, so that's a representation of this complex number. If we want to find the magnitude of it, it's just this distance here. But Dennis told us that it was root 2 divided by root 3. So the magnitude of this is actually just root 2 divided by root 3. Square that, you get 2/3. Another way of looking at it, I'll just take you through one more way. So I'll get the big eraser out for this. So is we can use Euler's formula to. Is that okay? So maybe an easier way is so remember the formula for do you remember this formula, which would incidentally look really good on a t-shirt? So if we have that formula, we just use it in this case. So and you can see where I'm going. Like this, so cos pi over 4, 1 over root 2, sine pi over 4, 1 over root 2, so we've got a common factor of 1 over root 2, take it out, well actually that just cancels out, like this, so we have one over root 3 plus I, one over root 3, like that, so, but if we look, so that's in the form u equals a plus bi, and here a equals.
So, how do we get 1 over root 2 to 1 over root 3?
Oh, right, so we've got 1 over root 2s in the denominator here, and we've got in the numerator, so they cancel each other out. And they cancel each other out. Oh, yeah, then multiplied 1.
Oh.
Yep. That's all we did. Yep. Okay. B is 1 over root 3. Just looking at, so that's B, A. And then the formula for the modulus, the magnitude of U is A squared plus B squared. So that's from your math primer. So really that comes to be, so if we square 1 over root 3, we get 1/3, and 1/3 again, so that gives us 2 divided by 3, and then to square that gives us 2 divided by 3, so that's how we get that. Well, okay.
Sorry?
Oh, right. Okay. Okay. So that's the answer, right. Yes?
Can I ask, how can I imagine in this second case, have 2 for the problem? It's really difficult for me to imagine what is the way the
bottom
goes.
Ah, yeah, so this is weird. So, very hard for everyone. But what this is like, is this is like a photon that gets to, yeah, excellent question, that gets to, so what, this is the math. What does it mean physically? What does that mean? So this is really like a photon that, this is like a photon that, so path 1 is here, path 2 is there. It's a photon that's mainly going along path 2, but kind of going along path 1. So it's mainly on path 2. Actually, does it, do you have the timetable? Does anyone have the timetable? Because we, for some reason, I think we're meant to move. Right. Yeah. Okay. This morning. Okay. So. No, we should be. Could you just go and check that it's okay to be here and there's not a seminar on now? Oh, could you just check that? If so, we'll have to move. So. Sorry. Okay. So we may. Could you also check too, Mark? And if so, we'll have to move. So sorry about that. I completely forgot. So I think it's moved. So what that's like is a photon that mainly goes along path 2, but is kind of two-thirds along path 2 and one-third along path 1, yes?
So the photon on path 1 is less real than the one on path 2?
Well, what do you mean by less real?
It's less there.
Less there. What do you mean by less there?
Okay.
So, really hard to say what's going on. Yes, question over there.
Wouldn't it be easier to understand it using Max Born's interpretation that it's it refers to the probability wave which is traveling both paths, not the photon itself?
Right. So, I mean, so technically, so to answer that, technically speaking, you can't use that interpretation for this because he was talking about a wave function, and this, you can't get a wave function of photons. So at a technical level, no. I mean, definitely the modulus of psi squared interpretation. So so technically you cannot use that.
Why can't you get a wave function of a photon?
Sorry? Well, because, I mean, there are various technical reasons for that, but basically there's no mathematical object that you can draw that has the properties, basically the properties you want for a wave function.
But in other instances, it would be possible.
So other instances such as?
Like, say, a double split.
Well, it depends on what you have in the double split. If you do it with photons, then no. If you do it with electrons, then you can get a wave function for that. And you're treating it non-relative. Well, so you can. I mean, if you're talking about this, if you treat it non-relativistically, yeah. But, so that is generally another way of looking at it. And you can use that. So that's a probability interpretation. So that view is saying, okay, forget talking about where the watch part really goes along, but focus in saying, there's a third question. You could just look at the third question now over on the page.
I know that.
I think that changes some errors in people's stories. I'm not sure how to interpret in between the many worlds.
I guess. Except that, see, many worlds in the genre make us talk about extreme things. Like in this case, in some cases, we talk about extreme like two worlds. But in other places, the photography that there are currently anywhere along the entire length of the entire range of distance.
I'm just going to check in, Alex. I got to move over to here. I'll be back in a second. Sorry, I just want to.
I mean, basically, if that is where you can see basically the guy looked at me,
Okay. Sorry about that. Okay, everything's under control now. So, you've all been working on the third problem, which is that one there. Okay, you want more time on that? Okay. Does anyone? Can everyone put their answer on the whiteboard nice and big so I can. Yep. Yep, correct. So what are A? What are A11 and A5?
What do they have to be?
Okay. Okay, define some. That's not right. Oh, but what do you mean by which both A? Right. But which must be greater? What must be one? That's true. But how do you expect that to make two on that? Yeah, thanks for that. Sorry, I'm getting paranoid. Yeah. What added to one? Right, but how does that relate to make itself? Well, no, they don't represent the probabilities. They almost do, but we need to take them and then take the modulus, the magnitude, and square that. Is that it? Yep. So can everyone put their... Okay, yep, that's right. So, okay. So the... Really, 1-1 element, magnitude of it squared plus 2-1 element, magnitude of it squared equals 1. So... But, yeah... Yeah. Okay. Great. So the reason why we have the 1/√2s there is these are like These are like this kind of like the square roots of probabilities. And if we're squaring 1 over 2s, we get halves. And we want those halves to translate into the probabilities. So the way we mathematically represent the probabilities in here is by kind of like putting the square roots of the probabilities. So we're taking the squares, we're forgetting about the magnitudes at the moment. And so this is why we have these factors of 1 over root 2. So the only thing kind of left is, why do we have this I there? And so where did that come? Why do we need complex numbers? So what that does is it doesn't affect the probability, because the I doesn't affect the magnitude of it. It doesn't actually affect the probability. And the easiest way to see that is if you have, well, what's the easiest way to see that? Maybe if you write it down, if you have, oh, okay, if you have an imaginary real thing here, and this is 1 over root 2, and this is I divided by root 2, then the magnitude of this is just this distance, it's 1 over root 2, and the magnitude of this is just the same, it's 1 over root 2. Oh, the magnitude is just, to get the probability, you screw it, absolutely. So the magnitude is the same, so this adding this I didn't make any difference. So it doesn't change the probability, but what it does is it changes the way the two paths interfere or overlap with each other, and how they get either in sync with each other or out of sync. So this is what we have, it's related to destructive and constructive interfaces of phase differences. And we'll see this in detail a bit later. So this is again kind of hand wavy at the moment. If you bear with me for a couple of slides, I'll actually show you what happens. Okay. So what about the second half of the mirror? So what we've done is that, okay, so before we go through the first half silvered mirror, we have, so just get them right, so yeah, so before we just have this, this is the initial matrix. This is just the photon going along here towards, going towards the first half of the mirror. Afterwards, we have stayed here, and then so after we go past the second half of the mirror, we must have one kind of matrix, and it's the same type of object. We still have one photon. We still only measure one photon at the end, so it will be some sort of 2x1 matrix, and this is. The second half silver. So the question is, what actually happens? How? What kind of matrix should it be? And so what we need to do is, so what happens at the first half silver mirror? What happens at the second half silver mirror is what happens at the first one. And what happens at the first one is we get this transformation. So the first one, we get that transformation, and it turns out that the way we can do that is, so that physically, that's sort of mathematically, that's what we're representing is by happening, is as the photon goes through the first half silver mirror. Now we want a mathematical way of actually representing that transformation. So what we need is some kind of mathematical object that transforms from what we see here over to here. And so one thing that does that is if we multiply this matrix by a certain matrix, then it will actually give us the answer we're looking for. So again, it's kind of abstract, but hopefully this will become a bit clearer. So what I'd like to ask of you now, so just taking a step, So we have four possibilities there. So what we want to do is start off with one 2x1 matrix, multiply it by some other matrix, and end up with a 2x1 matrix. And I'd like to ask you, what type of matrix does that? Does a 2x2 matrix does that, a 3x3, a 1x2, or a 2x1? And so what I'd like you to do is give you 2 minutes, talk to the people amongst you, find the answers out, then write them down on the whiteboard. And if you get that, then there are some extra questions there. Give you 2 minutes. Yep. Oh, yeah, good question. Sorry. 2x2 or whatever. Yeah. Oh. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, actually, if I can have everyone's attention, there was actually someone pointed out to me, there was something I should have added. What we're doing is we're actually pre-multiplying matrix. So we want some sort of matrix over here, because we could put it on the other side. So some matrix over on the left-hand side, we multiply by this one, that gives us that. So that's, we're not looking at the other case, which would be post-multiplying, just pre-multiplying. Thanks for taking the call. Sorry, I'm going to do this. I guess because I completely forgot that. I think at the last minute seminar it got changed from 10:30 or from 11 o'clock to 2 p.m. So that's why you're now. So can, do you have time for that? Because there's another time limit.
It doesn't actually, as long as you have one
person. Yeah. But again, I'm trying to hear you. I'm sorry to keep breaking the mic. Sorry to keep doing this, but I'll try to hear you. Sorry. What do you think about the pipe? Yes. There's actually a mistake in terms of the square of the module. The module is the probability. Like, I think it's good. I thought it was good. I might think I've got it. Okay. So. Okay, so. I could have your attention. So we'll just do this individual question here. So this first one, so you could put up your answers for Okay, great. Okay, everyone's got that. Okay, so it's 2x2. So what we have is one particular 2x2 matrix. And so we're looking for a 2x2 matrix, looking at this matrix to get from here to here. And so we could do a bit of trial and error and figure out what it works and what is. But again, if you trust me on this one, it turns out that this is the matrix you want here. So it's for the second half-silvered mirror, but it also works for the first one. And what we're doing is, so as we go through this system, the photon changes, the photon evolves, and the probabilities for it change. So the 2x1 column matrix, the probabilities change. They're reflected in changes in the matrix elements we have here and here. So what we have to do is keep on changing and updating it. And one of the most natural ways to do it is to keep pre-multiplying it by, you told me, a 2x2 matrix. So let's do that. So which 2x2 matrix? Well, it depends on exactly what particular system is evolving into, whether it's going through a mirror or a beam or a half-silvered mirror or whatever, something that could polarize it, who knows. But in this case, what the matrix is this one here. So again, a 2x2 matrix, we learned about those this morning. And it's a little, well, it's not too complicated. We've got these i's here, the square roots of minus 1, but this is what it is. So in this case, this is what we have. This is a matrix. This is a photon going along this path here. It gets transformed by that matrix. So what I'd like you to do, I'll give you 1 minute. This should be very quick. Just verify by doing that matrix multiplication that when you actually do this, this gives you this answer here. So if I'll give you 30 seconds to do that, and then check it with the people next to you. Right. Well, okay. That's well. We could put it inside there, but it's just again we're lazy. So if we put it outside, it's a common factor. We only have to write it once. We're writing it 4 times. Our hands get tired. Okay. 15 seconds. And if you've done that one, maybe do the other one. So I'll give you another 8 seconds to do that. Sorry? Yep, exactly. Yep. Okay, is everyone happy with that? Okay, I'll give you another 30 seconds and we're talking. Okay, so we should have got the answers there. 1/√2, i/√2, and there, i/√2, √2. So if I can have everyone's attention now. We've just verified that this is a matrix that worked. If you multiply that, you get first row, first column, 1x1. 1/i/0 gives you 1, the √2's out there, then i/1, 1/0. So it gives you this matrix here. So we know, yep, that's the matrix we want. So this is actually what transforms or updates the photon in terms of matrix. So again, this is the mathematical language. The mathematical language using matrices and complex numbers that physically what's going on changes. So physically what's going on is a photon going from here and then splitting up into there. But mathematically that transformation is described by this process here. So it's what we have. So, yes, Michael. Sorry, I can't hear what Michael's asking. Yes, you absolutely can do. Yes, yep. So, yeah, you do. You mean you need to know whether it's going from in from the side or from below? Or yes, absolutely. That makes a difference. So, okay, so does this matrix make sense? Well, it makes sense because it works in the case when we input 1, 0. So, okay. So if I could have... So it works, we saw it works in that case where the initial state, so hopefully that seems intuitive. But also if we have the other input, so the other possible input, the photon taking the other path, then really this would be like, instead of a photon coming in from the side here, this would be a photon coming in from below and splitting up like that. That would be what describes this evolution splitting up or taking both paths. So hopefully I've convinced you that this matrix has to be of the form here, because basically it works in the two cases we're looking at. So so we have that there. That's for the matrix. So the matrix that works in that cases. So what have, has someone got? Okay. So what we have is, so it's actually very, very fortunate that cell phone went off, because really, in a sense, we are describing, roughly speaking, the mathematics of cell phones, because that cell phone would not have gotten less in unless electromagnetic radiation came from the nearest receiving tower. And that is, of course, in the form of photons. And the way you actually describe that, if you really want to understand it, is exactly the mathematics we're using. So even though this seems very, very abstract, ultimately, it's the mathematics of cell phones and all types of electromagnetic radiation. So we're kind of mathematically representing this 2x1 column matrix, this vector, if you like, what the photon is doing. And we talk about it sometimes as the state of affairs of the photon. And often when you read books, they talk about the quantum state. And one tempting thing is to wonder, what actually is this thing? So what actually is this matrix? Does it correspond to anything physically really out there in the world? It's kind of a nice mathematical description, but this is physics. And so physics relates to the real world. So how can I relate this mathematical thing I write down on a piece of paper to really what the real world? And one way of doing it, we talk about this as being the state of the photon, because really this is just a mathematical way of kind of describing its states of affair. And another way is, if you know this photon, then you can predict what the result of all the measurements you'll make is. That is, what probability of being found with one detector, what probability of being found with another. So it's just a nice, compact way of kind of summarizing all of the probabilities and all of the outcomes you could get with the experiments, really compact. And the same thing actually applies over here for the wave function side. So that's a little bit different, but really, in essence, the same thing we're talking about applies to it too. And what it's kind of like is, imagine I have this six-sided die. So, you know, sort of the size 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and I roll it, and it comes up 1 through 6, or one number, and I roll it again and again and again. So we know the probability of getting any one result is 1/6. So if we were to kind of summarize all those results in a table, what we would get is probability of result 1 would be 1/6, result 2 would be 1/6. So it'd be a pretty boring table, because it is 1/6 down the bottom, and you know, that's not very exciting. But just as this kind of summarizes all the probability results, or the possibilities of getting different outcomes, so the state, or I'll talk about it as the state, or the quantum state, of which is actually this thing here in this particular case, any 2x1 matrix that tells you what the photon is doing, that is actually kind of analogous here, because here's this table, we've got all the probabilities. And here, kind of hidden away, and if you know the mathematics, you can kind of extract all the probabilities by taking the modulus and squaring those. You have all the information about the probabilities of measurement outcomes. And so it's kind of similar in some way to this. And so someone asked about the Born interpretation, the Born rule. So this is more fitting in line with that, in the sense that this is kind of a summary of all the probabilities you get. Just the Born rule is the rule of Max Born. Right, just do you know who Olivia Newton-John is or not? Am I just?
Yes.
Okay. So she was in this movie called Grease, but you would not know about Grease because it was way long ago. It was back when I was a kid. But you know Grease? Okay, so she's in Grease, John Travolta, before he went on to do Quentin Tarantino films and that type of stuff. He was in this film called, and you might think, why am I talking about this? Sorry?
She's Australian.
Oh, she is, yeah, that's true. But Olivia Newton daughter, Olivia Newton-John's grandfather was actually Max Born.
No way.
This is true. So, Google it tonight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's true. So hands up who doesn't believe me. Hands up who believes everything I say. Okay. Great. So no, this is true. This is true. So yeah, I challenge you, Google it tonight. You'll find out. So basically, Olivia Newton-John's grandfather came up with really this statistical rule, and the statistical rule is that you get the probabilities, you get these components, you take their magnitude, and you square them. So that's kind of like a probability interpretation, just as we have this sort of probability table here. So that's, in fact, about quantum physics. Okay, we might we're just about to finish up. I'll just go through here. And then, so what we're going to review, so we've kind of done a bit of quantum physics, and we just want to take a deep breath. So the next, basically after today, we won't do any more in terms of the math primer and so forth. You'll definitely use a lot of math, and the math that you've learned in the first couple of days will be very useful, but we're getting on to the physics. So after this, in a couple of minutes, we'll just take a little breath and we'll review some of the mathematics we've been using. We'll go back to that, and then before going on. So we have these two formulas here, so two different states. We have states of affairs, and so we'll probably start talking about them as quantum states. And they're really kind of summarizing how photons behave and what they're doing and the probabilities for measuring them in certain paths or by certain detectors. And they kind of look the same. They have exactly the same probabilities. If you take the modulus, if the eyes don't matter, you square them, you get a half and a half. So, what's the difference? This will be a bit hand-waving now, but we'll see in a minute that they actually have different interference properties because they have different kind of phase properties, so they overlap and interfere with each other in different ways, and we'll actually see why that happens and how that gives you. What we're putting up is you will derive the 100% 0% result that was kind of troubling and counterintuitive before. So, okay, so last point, so we have, if we put one photon to the left of the experiment, then the initial state is this, and I guess, so this should be, okay, so I've kind of already done this in here, so if we, afterwards, so we have the 1/1, okay. So all I'm doing is just one I1, and so actually you did this just before, so it's a bit redundant. And then you got the result 1/√2 I. So at the very start yesterday afternoon, I was kind of this hand wavy saying, well, the photon splits up and takes both paths. What I can say more precisely mathematically now is, as you saw, what happens is the photon initially has, again, if you want to talk like a real physicist and impress mum and dad at home, then you say, well, the photon, the state of the photon, the quantum state or the probability summary goes from being here being, I guess, multiplied by whatever transformation we have for the first half-silver mirror here. And mathematically, what's happening, so physically what's happening is it's going through the half-silver mirror. Mathematically, what happens is we multiply it by this matrix here, which we kind of saw was the correct one. And just matrix multiplication, we get this result here. So that's the final state of the photon. So what we actually have to do is then take this state, so that's it after the first one, and then what we have to do is take this state and then so to figure out the state after the second beam splitter, take this state and multiply the same matrix again. And this is the final state. So what I'd like you to do is do that matrix multiplication. And then what you do is, and then figure out the probabilities for the two paths. Take the modulus and square those. And then that will give you the final result. And that will actually give you the 1-0 result, the 100% 0% result. So you'll see that. So it'll be 5 minutes to do that. Michael. That's by, so it's kind of, so, I mean, in some sense that's arbitrary, but what we, I mean, physically what we're saying is, if you've got, we're just saying that, do you have notes? So we're saying, we're calling that path one, we're just saying this is path one, and if the photon is path one, then... that's... Okay, so that's yeah, part one. And if the photon takes that part, we just stay at state zero. So we kind of continue part one back before the after we get here. So we say that when it's here, we just find that new part. So we find part one to be this entire part. And so it comes in its way to part one, and we just mathematically write part one by that there. So that's what we're doing.
Thank you.
convention. That's just saying that it's going differently about one topic. Did you mean why the 2 1 0, why the 0 1?
No, it's just like one line there.
Oh, it's there because you have just before the photo is where it's part of the mirror. Someone doing something. And 100% of the time you're playing the rules of the class. So everybody's surprised and like,
I'm going to go to the next one.
Hey guys, just spend a couple of minutes. Have a break. We have an official break at 3:15. That's it. So that's where we're all together. Baby, don't forget to take your. Again, I want to take you more than just giving you the stuff. I want to show you why we use it. Again, take you a feeling of this and show you some examples that are useful. interesting. And again, show you why it's cool for physicists. A lot of you I asked Damien before he left that tomorrow to walk you through what's happening, because a lot of people don't, they're knowing, they're doing stuff, they don't know why they're doing this, all right? Yeah, you're just doing something, okay, multiplying by this, don't know why, which one represents bouncing, you're going through and all this other stuff. So I asked him, and he's going to take you through step by step, so you can see which state is happening at which you get to get a feeling. Right now, when people are doing the mechanics, they don't quite get the mechanics, right? He was a bit rushed because he had a meeting to go to. And so anything in red on your sheet is what you'll be talking, dealing with this. So you've got plenty of time, and we'll make sure that you understand why it works, how it's working, and his diagram didn't quite match what's happening. So he was even confused on that as well. So take a deep breath. We're just gonna bring it down a huge notch. Okay. We're gonna do some nice easy math. But then I'm gonna show you how we can use this nice easy math to do some stuff to allow us to be lazy. That's the whole idea. Then this afternoon, after the break, the second part of the break, I've got some worksheets for you to help each other out and work with, just in calculus stuff, just to see, and I've got different levels, so ideas you want to start with the easiest level, or if you really know your stuff, just get a middle level, or even the hard level, and then help each other work your way through. I'll take up as many of these as we need to take up. Some of you may want to take it home to residence tonight and work through it. Do you have a play today?
Yeah.
So, you know, just think about it while you're in intermission on the play. Right? So it's too bad it was Shakespeare, because you could solve a problem with a to be or a not to be in it. But that is the question. Binomial theorem. Now, you guys read? Hopefully everybody knows binomial. So we're just gonna have some fun with this. I'm gonna take it right down. This is kind of nice, guys. Excuse me?
Yeah.
My turn? An easy concept, but this concept had many implications, and its implications were used in a variety of different areas of physics, different areas of science, different areas of math. And we'll get an appreciation of it, and then again, I'll show you how we get to use it, and some of the things that make sense, some of the things that don't make sense, and then we'll just prove something, have a look at something, I'll put it on the board, figure it out, have some fun stuff. So we'll just take it very easy. Start out at the beginning, and this should be pretty good, because all I'm going to give you is a binomial, those in there, which means two terms, right? If it was three, it would be called a
binomial.
Okay, so I want you to do this the long way, right? Some of you already know it, don't you? Right? So if you can just expand this for me, expand this for me. Why not do this one? And I'll be good and I'll stop you here. Alright? So, hey, just stand there. Okay? This, I guess, we're just going to take a step back. Right? No thinking of complex numbers. Right? This is nice, easy multiplication. Right? This will happen when you're at university. You'll be taking certain classes. One class, you'll be walking out of there like this. And you go into another class, and it's down, it's smooth, and it's easy. To enjoy the easy ones. And you feel so challenged, do the next one. Do it the long way. I want you to appreciate what they had to go through back in around Newton's time. Remember back then, they didn't have any calculators, right? So if you could imagine, if rather than me stopping you there, I stopped you here. Now, it would have been great if I was going to be a teacher back then, lecturing you on binomial expansion, and you guys were noisy. I just put something like that, maybe you would have zero behind it, and then sit down and read a paper for a week. You guys work it through, right? There's a story about you guys working through. Yeah. I said first principles. No jump ahead. Okay. No, we'll get there. I want you to appreciate what Newton had to go through. Why was he done? Where this thing all came from? Like I said, some of you have seen this before, right? Some of you have not. You have to work with everybody. That's a level of maturity to recognize when to work with others and not. Okay, no going to the table. No, it's easy. Look directives. We'll talk about that. That's all we can see. All right, does anybody get the first one?
One.
How about the second one? A plus B. How about the third one? This one maybe we should do. Maybe we can go probably that one. We should probably memorize it, but what should you come up with?
A squared.
Well, you said it in unison. You should make a song out of that, right? Like a rap song. Binomial rap song.
Yeah.
The rapping physicists. What a group. How about anybody get the third one? Right? Hopefully all you did is took this thing and multiplied by A plus B again. So what came out of it?
That's
what I'm hearing.
No, that's like us. 3A squared B.
3A squared B?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, never mind, sorry. It's just that in my head I had a guy first.
So this is what we do. So this one would be... Did it really matter?
No, it just makes it more logical.
Yeah, it makes it more logical. It's a pattern, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's kind of neat. I was hearing about two different groups giving simultaneously. But yeah, it didn't matter. There is a pattern. That was the first thing to notice. That there was a pattern. Now, let's again. Assume you've not, and I know a lot of you have read ahead and you know about some dude called Pascal and his geometric chain. At least tell me without the coefficients. Remember, coefficients is just a number in front. What would the letters look like for this thing? At least what you would think. But looking at the pattern, forget about the numbers. Let's look at look at the letters. What do you think the first letter is going to be?
A and 4.
You don't know the number yet. What do you think the next thing will be?
A3
with A.
B.
And the next one would be?
A squared B squared.
And the next one would be?
A B Q.
And the next one? So you kind of notice. When I mean 4A, I mean 8 to the 4. There's 4A's, 3A's, 2A's, 1A, no A. No B, 1B, 2B, 3B, 4B. Right? So there's a pattern. So that's the first thing they were noticing. But again, they would work it out the long way. They really did. Until somebody was actually looking out. It was, some books say it was developed by Blaise Pascal, but it was like millennia ago. I know that in some of the Babylonian, some of the Chinese manuscripts had Pascal's triangle, and I don't think there was somebody from China named Pascal, so I don't know why. But that's the way it is going. But there was a pattern. A was in there that matched.
Yes.
Now, how many people have heard of Pascal's triangle? So you have some people who don't. So this is kind of neat. So this is a nice little tool when you get to math, get to use, because it's a raw pain to multiply these things out. Best one you can do, this one, if you do it enough, you memorize it. But anything beyond there is difficult. So this is where what Pascal's triangle came from. It was just initially fun with math. Remember we talked about the math dudes? They got nothing to do at night. There is no such thing as iPods or TVs. They just sit there. There's no such thing as electricity. So they would sit there with their feathers, in ink, and just doing math stuff, right? And somebody did this. And they said, oh, 1 plus 1 is 2, not the 1 on the outside. If you look from it, 1 on the outside, 1 plus 2 is 3, 2 plus 1 is 3, 1 on the outside. 1 on the outside, 1 plus 3 is 3 plus 3 is 3 plus 1 is 4. Let's do one more, we'll bring it back. 1 plus 4 is 5, 4, 10, 10. Five. See the pattern? Easy? Yeah, easy. I can keep going. I can flip the board, bring the next board, and have the pattern. Oh, so this is like, let's see what we kind of notice here. This is called Pascal's triangle. Not because you created it, but because you did a lot of work with it. My triangles are huge. First one, one. One. Yes. My second one, the coefficients, one and one. Look at this, one and one. One, two, one. One, two, one. One, three, three, one. Right? I can put in some numbers. What's going to be here?
1, 4, 6, 4, 1.
You know what? Here's level, if you think about it, this is the number 4, which nobody can remember. First time you get a number, that's the exponent. 4 matches the 4. That's a nice way to remember where you are. Okay, see the 4 here? 3 represents you were on the 3. So here's the one with 4, 5. Right? Do 6, 7, 8, 9. And do the 10, and do the bottom one. Okay? So kick out the bottom one. Now, just think what you're doing. I don't want you to multiply this out the long way. No. Use the pattern, right? Here's a hint. A to the 10th. I keep the first one. I didn't keep the last one. B to the 10th. Use this pattern. Fill in the numbers from Pascal's triangle.
Can you just use the binomial form?
We will pull it up in a second. We'll just do it step by step, by step, by step. We're understanding where this thing came from. Like I said, some of you moved your head, but we're trying to understand so that everybody's brought the same number. Now, it's not bad, it's a bit of a pain, but you know what? Trust me, you would like to do it this way rather than expanding it out the long way. So this is the first step that allowed people to sit there and say, wow, thank goodness for that mathematician dude who recognized a pattern. Now, while you're working that out, there are many patterns within here. 11 to the 0 is what? 11 to the 1 is 11 squared. Take a count, it's 11 cubed. A lot of people spend a lot of time looking for patterns within Cassell's triangle. Some of them started with different numbers.
Right.
There's something about this thing, but people can find a way of making it. Yes, carrying and something. But you got nothing to do at night. Create your own version of Pascal's triangle, right?
What's down?
Call it the perimeter triangle. Create some different rules. That's how discoveries are made. Something so obvious. And there are things hidden inside there that some people know about.
Yeah.
Like, and some people forgot about it.
It'll go up by, like, starting from one, it'll go up by one, then two, then three, then four, then five.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Okay, I think by my clock, I think we've got a break. So we'll come back. We're gonna take this, and we're gonna show you how the whole field of statistics and permutations and combinations came out of this. Because imagine if I had given you this. You wouldn't want to do it this way either. So we'll show you how to do it that way. So we've got a technique that will work for here. And I'm not going to write it out. You'll know, I think you know what it is. Right? You're working it through. A lot of big numbers. Right? How many terms were there?
One.
Yeah, there's actually
11.
So
no.
There was one, two terms, three terms. Always one more term than each one. So here you know how many terms there are. Right?
Yeah.
There we go. Okay, so it's break time. You've got about 15 minutes, I think. So enjoy your break. We'll come back. We're going to take this thing and we're going to digest it and create formulas out of it and then show you some shortcuts.